accession number 20267, Reel 6.
John Webber, Reel 6.
And this large lump of shrapnel thudded into the ground in front of me, much to my relief. And then I was obviously on my way back to the beach, the side beach, which was codenamed Hove, I remember. And we stayed there, sort of watching that the Japanese didn't attack down the river. During that period, I remember having to lead a patrol out in front of us to a village called Nezingbong, I think it was pronounced. I can't, looking at a map since, but I remember going to this village on a patrol. There was three of us, and I remember we went out there. We were suspicious of a noise in some bushes, which we thought might be some Japanese, which we, having put some covering fire on it, I went in to see what was what, and it was some domestic animal that probably got frightened to death by the shell fire and was tangled up in the bushes. But we found no evidence of any Japanese in the village itself, and then returned to the beach, rather. Then it came to the procedure, obviously, that the commando's operation there was being finished. Our commando was withdrawn back across the other side of the Chong from where all the fighting was going. We went to like sort of a reserve, presumably because up to that time we had suffered the most casualties. So we were back over the side and we sat there and we watched the subsequent battle. When the Japs put the full-scale attack in on Kangol. But prior to that, I can vividly remember sitting there and the hill opposite Pinner, what was called Perth, I think, was the big hill where the gun was. And I can see this fleet of Mitchell bombers coming in. And it was so clear. It was like they'd been at the movies. We sat there. You could see them coming in. We saw the bomb doors open. We saw all these bombs dropping and hitting this hill, which was a beautifully greenly clad hill. See them hitting. And then the bombers went off. There's a terrific cloud of dust. And then about an hour or so later, you could see a virtually barren hill. But it still hadn't shifted the Japs out of the hills entirely. But it was just like being at the pictures. And then, of course, we were aware that there was a hell of a scrap going on 170 that day. But, of course, though we could hear it and probably see a bit of it, we could certainly see the support aircraft which was coming in to dive bomb the Japs. But we were no part of it. We were just sat there watching. And eventually, of course, the whole operation was taken over by the whichever brigade it was of the division. And we were withdrawn back to Akiab. So really, the worst, we were out of the terrific battle on 170. Though, which has always surprised me, we weren't brought back over to strengthen things. But
so you were with number one section.
I was with B troop, number one section, the B troop.
And when you were first in the Arakan, were you also in the same unit?
Yes, I was in the same unit all the time. I was with B Troop, Captain Sturgeon, all the time.
And you were a sergeant?
Yeah. So then we went back to Akiab and various camps there. We got entertained by some of the Indian troops to a curry meal, and then they came back to a do with us, because they may seem strange, but there was a great deal of respect for one another and comradeship with these Indian units. And of course, if you read the order of the day from General Christensen, he does mention the tremendous respect with which the commando brigade was held by the troops, other troops. And although one thing I remember about these visits with these with this Indian unit was that we engaged them in tug of war. But instead of, when it came to the tug, instead of the anchor man being like traditionally we do it, by having the rope round his back and putting, they turned around, put the rope over his shoulder and was walking away the other way, pulling it, which caused quite amusement. And then, to my great surprise, suddenly one day they see the company commander who come to me and says, "John, you've been drawn out of the hat to go home on a month's leave in England." So, there I then, started the torturous journey back up to Chittagong, across to Calcutta, and I know someone tried to set fire to, there were three of us travelling together. Someone tried to set fire to our accommodation at the transit camp in Calcutta. I also vividly remember we were in Calcutta itself with an army unit, and one of the chaps there said, "Hang on a minute," he said, "this will be interesting. There was a bit of a riot and demonstration going on about something." He said, "You better come in here." And that was inside of a wire barrier. And we saw these Indian police arrive and form up. And then they just formed up. They got these long, they think they call them lathis. And they just walked down to this shouting crowd and they just hit anything and everybody, anywhere and everywhere, until they got them running headlong down the streets and they chased after them. It was quite a sight to see, really. I often wondered afterwards in my police service whether that would have been a good way to deal with some demonstrations over here, but perhaps not on quite cricket. And then there was this long, monotonous, I think it took us a week, train journey across India, sleeping in the train and stopping for long periods at stations. And then, strangely enough, I cannot, for the life of me now, and I don't know why, I cannot recollect. I can recollect getting to Bombay, but I cannot recollect the boat, the name of the boat, or what happened, or how I got home. I got home to, I think it was Liverpool, and travelled down to home. But I cannot, the voyage is a complete blank. Why, I don't know. Perhaps there was nothing outstanding in it, you know. It was obviously a troop ship back. I certainly didn't fly back. And I didn't fly back out again. and I arrived home at my parents' home on VE Day, which was a strange coincidence. Effectively, on VE Day, I was home. Well, then there was a month at home, during which time I came down to Southampton. I met up with Joan again. She came up to my home, and I went back on the 6th of June, and I'd been down here with her, and we travelled up to Salisbury Railway Station together. And got engaged in the shadow of Salisbury Cathedral. Went to the station, and she sat on one platform for the train back this way, and I sat on the platform for the train back on the other way. And as I forget which went first. And then I went back, and again, I cannot recollect the journey back. Cannot recollect anything about the journey back, other than arriving in Bombay and having a heck of a job to find the commando. And I eventually finished up in the holding commando at Carrickmacnoise. And I was made temporary company sergeant major there. I don't know how long I was there. But whilst we were there, not Carrickmacnoise, sorry, it's Lake Bill. I'm mixing the lakes up. Lake Bill, beautiful lake. And we used to spend time getting in these man canoes and paddling out in the middle of the lake and just drifting, because that was the coolest thing you could do. And of course we had Indian servants who did all the equipment cleaning and all the rest of it, so it was really a life of Riley. And then of course the bomb dropped in Japan, and I had a very low mob number 28. And within weeks, I was on my way home again. I had, it was just this period there when, you know, we were doing things, but nothing spectacular. Really, I was at a, it was an administration job, you know, sorting out the incoming drafts and as I say, of course, when the bomb dropped, that with a low number, I was on the way home, virtually. But I was very ill. I was feeling very groggy. It's the first time I really felt ill. And
what did you have?
Well, I thought I had malaria, and I knew I was on the way, and I was determined not to go sick and be delayed, so I stuck it out. We had 300 weight trucks to drive us into Bombay, into some naval barracks. I remember that they showed us into a barrack room, which all I had for the night was a spring bed with no mattress on it, just a string, and I sort of fought myself through the night there. Went on board troop ship next morning, and in view of my rank, I then had a sort of a cabin accommodation. I went up there with the other senior NCOs, and I threw my kit under the bed, bunker, whatever it was, and said to them, "Let me know when we sail, I'll wave farewell to the Gateway of India," and went and laid on my bunk. And sure enough, that evening they came, "Hey, Johnny, that they just cast off," and I went out on deck and watched the ship, as I say, wave bye bye to the Gateway of India. and then went straight down to the sick bay and reported sick to the naval surgeon. And he just took one look at me and went like that. Picked up a pot, he says, go over there and pee in that. Came back and gave it to him. He said, kit, get your kit, sick bay, you've got yellow jaundice.
He pulled his eyelids back.
Yeah, he went like that and then said, pee in that. And then I came back, he said, you've got yellow jaundice, sick bay. So I spent nearly all the voyage home, on the best troop ship I'd ever been on, in the sick bay, having nothing but boiled fish or lemon water, all up through in the heat of the Suez. And when we got to about Jib, I was able to go back. And we docked in Liverpool. And I was sent home on leave. And that was before Christmas, because I was home for Christmas. And when then we got married on January the 5th, and then I went back down to Exmouth Barracks the end of February to get my discharge papers and hand in my uniform and get my civvy suit. And that was 6 years of war for me.
How do you feel now about having served with the Royal Marines in the Second World War?
Very proud. Very proud to serve with them.
Did you have any after effects of your service? From your service?
No, I don't think there's anything of it. I mean, you've heard one. 6 years, everywhere I went and did everything, yet I miraculously didn't get anything. Until just as I was coming home to be demobbed. And the reason we got that yellow jaundice, I'm sure, is the cooking in Lake Bill, everything was fried in fat. Chips and everything. And I think it was too much fat.
Did you have any psychological effects of having served?
No, no. It's not caused me any nightmares. I mean, I remember the colleagues and that, but no. I mean, I just thank God that I was able to come through it all right.